Mama is treating me to breakfast.
Yep, let me see your phone.
Huh?
Look here. I download this McDonald's app because when you buy any bagel sandwich like the steak, egg, and cheese bagel, you get one free.
Wait, you just bought that on my phone.
That's right. Now that you got McDonald's money, you could treat Mama.
Okay, Ma, you got it.
Valid for product of equal or lesser value. Valid through 10/2/22 at participating McDonald's. Valid one time per day. App download and registration required.
Introducing Under Armour's Infinity High Sports Bra. Its ergonomic design is molded to support the natural movement of your body. With cord-out padding, the better breathability eliminates extra bulk without sacrificing support. And quick-dry padding is Under Armour's fastest-drying padding yet. When you're lifting heavy, running fast, and pushing yourself further than ever before, you need a bra that will help you go that extra mile and make you feel your best. Shop the Infinity High Sports Bra now at UA.com.
Let's do it. Whitney, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. There's obviously a specific reason you're here. We're very excited to discuss that. But for those who may be baby investors, maybe youngins to putting our money into any industry, let alone cannabis, can you just give us a little bit of, we don't need your full bio, but your expertise, you know, what you look for, your investment thesis, if you will.
Sure. I'm an old school value investor. I'm an old geezer, 55 years old. I grew up and learned investing at the feet of the masters, Buffett and Munger. So, in my old age, I suppose I've actually, you know, I'm always trying to expand my mind and be open to investment opportunities where traditionally I wouldn't look. And I think my guess is I'm probably one of the more unusual guests you've ever had in that I don't consider myself an expert in this space. But the fact that a guy like me, an old school value guy, just listed my number one stock pick for my mm-hmm. newsletter business, for this year is the Advisor Shares Pure Cannabis ETF, MSOS. It's basically the U.S. Cannabis Index. I think says something like anyone investing in this sector, when a guy like me, you know, wades in a big way, that's probably a pretty good indicator. I'm happy to sort of dive into the details about sort of, you know, what I see in the industry and why I think the pricing is right and so forth. But it's something I'm pretty excited about.
You know, before we get into your bullish thesis on MSOS, you mentioned, you know, how relevant it is for a guy like you to jump in this industry and really, you know, talk about this so openly. Why do you think other big institutional investors are not invested in cannabis yet? Why are they not involved? Are they looking at it? What do you know? What can you share?
Yeah, well, one of the reasons I'm bullish on it is because I think the sentiment is changing, and it's partly a sentiment. It's partly literally legal things. You know, any big institutional investor has got a big compliance department. This is still a Schedule I drug, according to federal law and so forth. So banks don't want to bank these companies. Institutional investors don't want to own them yet, but it's clearly changing. There's absolutely no question that the legal and regulatory framework is moving in the right direction and is irreversible in my view. You just look at the surveys of Americans who favor legalizing cannabis and so forth. It's gone up dramatically, and politicians will follow the voters eventually for mm-hmm. sure. And the regulators will follow the politicians. And the institutional investors will come along as well. So I like identifying trends, you know, early. As an investor, the single best thing you can do is find an enormous trend that's just going to grow and grow and grow, and get in early before all the institutional money, et cetera, comes in. So, you know, a couple years ago, we put together more than an hour long video documenting electric vehicles and autonomous vehicles. It was our biggest marketing promo success ever. But, wow. This was before Tesla went up 8x, last year and so forth, and recommended five stocks that have all basically on average more than doubled. Getting ahead of enormous trends, and then in particular, if you can get in when the sentiment is crappy and the valuations are low, now you've mm-hmm. got exponential upside on the stocks.
Well, I was just about to ask you that. I mean, last year was not a great year for this industry. In fact, it was pretty awful. So overall, right. So you look at that, and that along with the idea that federal legalization could get behind technicals finally, as well as fundamentals, did that really spurn your thesis to move forward here, like at the present time?
Yeah, well, interestingly, my history in this sector is fairly limited, but it first came to my attention in the enormous bubble that had the blow off top in September 17th, 18th, 19th of 2018, when famously Tilray hit $300 a share intraday. And I could, Tilray, it was at that time trading north of 1,000 times revenues. I'm not making this up. Had a $30+ billion market cap. It was absurd. I went on national television on Yahoo Finance. You can Google it and see the interview. Like literally the hour Tilray peaked at $300 a share. I said, this is one of the most extreme bubbles I've ever seen in my investing career. This stock will be down 50% in a matter of weeks. Will be down 90%. Turns out it was too conservative. It went from 300 to under three. It went down by more than 99%.
Oh, man.
And, after calling the top of that bubble, I sort of stopped paying attention to the sector. Now, where I got back in was a little over a year ago when we did a special webinar where we predicted what happened, which is a blue wave, that Biden would win the presidency, mm-hmm. the Democrats would take both houses of Congress. And one of the sectors that we thought would benefit from this was the cannabis sector, because generally Democrats have been more about decriminalizing marijuana for sure, et cetera. So of a 10 stock portfolio that we put together for our subscribers, we called it the blue wave basket. One of them was our favorite cannabis stock, Green Thumb Industries, at $13. And it went to $40, almost $40 within about 6 months. We didn't get our subscribers out right at the top, but we got them out at $29, made 112% for our subscribers in about 9 months. And that was in June. And that was a good sale. As you pointed out, the sector, after having sort of a blow off top a little under a year ago, has been sort of in the doghouse, and it's been declining a lot. And now I'm super interested again. We haven't had any exposure to the sector, but I think the sell off now is well overdone, and both on the fundamentals of the sector, I still think are very much intact. But I also think the valuations are back down on both a revenue and an EBITDA basis across the sector, are back down to almost their all-time historical lows. And that's mm-hmm. super interesting to a value guy like me.
Definitely. Now, I mean, you say, you were kind of counting on the blue wave, but it hasn't really panned out in terms of a policy change, right?
Yeah.
Are you still
one of the reasons
factoring
the stocks
that in?
A good week is we didn't get what we wanted in the Safe Banking Act, for example. The legalization, it's just been taking a little more time than we hoped.
But that
creates an investment opportunity if you still believe in the long-term thesis. Inevitable things, sometimes they can still be inevitable, but they can take longer than you hope, right? And investors, one of the other reasons I like this sector is because it's filled with irrational investors. Irrational. And you've got a bunch of day trading meme stock jokers in the sector. You win in two ways. You can buy extra cheap because the sell-offs tend to be overdone, but then you can exit at extra high prices because mm-hmm. the blow-off tops tend to be overdone, right? If you're rational, you want to be in a room with as many irrational people as possible. So that's why, that's why I like the SPAC sector. The cannabis sector, the biotech sector right now is super interesting. All three of these sectors have just gotten obliterated.
Talk about playing the game, Whitney. My God, that's fantastic. So let's start with the opportunity. If you don't mind, I'd like to understand your thoughts, because there's a lot to cannabis stocks. There's U.S. market, there's Canadian, which is a conversation within itself. There's international, there's ancillary, there are REITs. There's a lot to cannabis public markets, but it seems like you're focused in on U.S. MSOs as the opportunity.
Yeah. I haven't spent a lot of time on the international side. Interestingly, again, there's a weird market inefficiency in that Canada legalized. And so you had the Canadian companies listed on the U.S. exchange, purchasable by institutional, and you know, there were regular stock tickers, right? Where weirdly enough, on the U.S. markets, the U.S. companies, were all on the pink sheets and still are, right? And institutional, you know, there are reasons why institutional investors. So the Canadian stocks were the ones that had the biggest bubble, and that's what I really warned people to stay away from. And my view actually is still, look, the U.S. Population is more roughly 10 or a little more than 10 times Canada's. And we're in the earlier stages of legalization, et cetera. So, you know, if you're going to catch growth curves, you want to catch them earlier. So it's a much larger market. It's earlier in the growth curve. You have more catalysts in terms of legal and regulatory improvements, as frustrating as it may be, in that it hasn't happened as quickly as we would have hoped so far. So you add all of that up. And by the way, the valuations, even though, you know, the valuations are still, I think, a lot cheaper here in the U.S. as well, because a lot of the big money of the world still can't buy these stocks. Again, another catalyst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Now, you mentioned you're pretty bullish this year on SPACs, biotech and cannabis, right? And you know, biotech and SPACs really touch the cannabis world, right? SPACs were some of the major, you know, capital investment drivers and general deal flow drivers last year. They're investing into ancillary businesses. And then there's biotech, which was another big winner last year with Jazz Pharmaceuticals acquiring GW Pharmaceuticals, with Pfizer acquiring Arena Pharmaceuticals. Are you looking at the intersection there? Are there any specific stocks that you're looking at in the biotech space? And are you still bullish on cannabis SPACs? Or do you think that is kind of overdone already?
Yeah. Look, my colleague, you should invite my colleague Enrique Abeda to come talk about SPACs in the intersection there. He publishes, we have a SPAC focused newsletter called Empire SPAC Investor. He's the publisher there. I guess I would defer to him on that. The other, you know, keep in mind, my investing audience is, you know, a bunch of, you know, older men who just aren't ever going to be able to dive into the weeds on cannabis stocks and or biotech. So the XBI, which is the ETF for biotech, you know, the chart there looks similar to the cannabis one. It's beaten up. And again, you know, I'm very long term bullish on the fundamentals of biotech, particularly actually, I think the whole COVID thing and the billions and hundreds of billions of dollars that both governments and private companies and educational institutions are pouring into research. It's not just going to benefit, you know, COVID vaccines. I think it's going to benefit the whole biotech sector. In general, and come up with all sorts of great therapeutics to address, you know, all sorts of human afflictions, right? So the thesis is actually sort of similar. And, I know when I'm a generalist and when I'm the expert in the retail sector, you know, I'm definitely picking individual stocks, for example, just because that's a sector I've been investing in for 20 years. Both the cannabis and biotech, I'm more of a, you know, it's a big picture bet, and both on the fundamentals of the industry and on the sentiment, couldn't be worse, you know, toward the stocks in general. So I'm just making a diversified bet via an ETF.
Perfect. Fantastic. So MSOS, let's look at that. You talk about, you know, the major, milestone there would be safe banking. Do you have an expectation there? Do you have any insight you'd like to share with us in terms of legislation?
No, not particularly. You know, it may seem like, well, then why are you investing in this? It's because, you know, I've got five or six ways to win here. This is one catalyst, but it's not the one I'm banking on that my investment thesis hinges on. I think just generally legalization in additional states, And by the way, I mean, there are banks that will work with cannabis companies. They generally charge very high fees, you know, to do so. Again, there's just a trend that more banks will start, you know, entering this sector because there's a lot of money to be made. And the fees are still pretty high, but that will tend to bring fees down. That'll be a catalyst. And just general acceptance by the population. I think generally cannabis consumption has a nice long-term tailwind, independent of the legalization, which is obviously a big catalyst. And then simply the valuation and sentiment. And you know, I mean, look, I was a little early. I was recommending MSOS sort of late last year, and it's down some since then. And that doesn't really bother me. When I know I'm catching a falling knife, you know, when I know sentiment is bad, it's sort of hard to pick the exact bottom. I mean, it's great when I can nail the top of Tilray to the hour, but you know, the reality is sometimes, you know, you just got to be, the most important thing is to be right on the fundamentals, on the valuation and the fundamentals of the companies or sector. And you just can't lose too much sleep over trying to get the timing exactly right. But, yes. But again, a good sign for anybody looking to get into this sector is a guy with reasonably good instincts, I'd like to think, like me, got in, you know, 20-25% higher than here. And that's one of my favorite investing themes. I love buying things that Warren Buffett was buying at 25% higher, right? Not that I'm comparing myself to Warren Buffett, but in other words, just generally, if other smart people thought this was really attractive at a quite a bit higher price, and the story hasn't really changed, just the sentiment's gotten worse, then it's even more interesting to me today.
Definitely. You know, and I do see it's a fair comparison. I do see a lot of Buffett in you and the way you invest. Actually, one of the people in the chat, El Guapotron, says, isn't it funny how the older guys have a longer time horizon than the younger investors? Years, not days.
Yeah. Right? It's sort of funny because, you know, I'm not retiring ever, but you know, at age 55, you know, a 25-year-old should really have a long-term horizon because they do. But look, we, you know, one of the things, you know, I suspect your viewership skews younger is I would say to younger investors is look, you have grown up in the longest bull market in history. You have been conditioned to buy every dip. And that's not the way the stock market always works. And if something silly, you know, was trading at 10 times revenue and then from the bottom in March of 20 to the blow off top in January 27th of 21 of the meme stocks, for example, you know, just because something goes from 10 times revenue to 20 times revenue and then trades back to 10 times revenue does not mean that stock is cheap. So, you know, turning to the cannabis sector, one of the things like biotech's sort of hard, like, because there's no EBITDA multiple or cash flow multiple, and often there's not even a revenue multiple, right? Whereas in the cannabis sector, I can look across U.S. cannabis companies and I can say at their peak last February or so, they were trading at 8 times revenue and 22 times EBITDA. Today, they are trading at 3 times revenue and 8 times. Let me pull up. I want to give your people the right numbers here. We're trading at 22 times revenue early last year, and now let me be very precise. On a revenue multiple of a basket of U.S. cannabis companies that I follow, they were trading at 8 times revenue, now they're at 3 times revenue, and 3 times revenue has been sort of a historical bottom X the COVID low when they got down to like 1.5 times revenue, right?
Yeah, and for any
that was only for a month with that COVID shock, right? And on an EBITDA multiple, they were trading at 22 times, now they're at 9 times, right? So like those are real, particularly the EBITDA is like a real cash generating. These are businesses where, you know, as a traditional value guy, I can value on a multiple of cash flow. And by the way, it makes it much more likely that someone will acquire them, or that they have the they can buy back stock, they could go private, they could merge with a SPAC, etc. When a company is generating real revenue that and real cash flow that can be a catalyst right there.
Fantastic. Wow. So is there something similar in your investing history that you can compare to MSOS? There's a lot of younger cannabis investors, a lot of cannabis activists and enthusiasts and passionate people about cannabis that pay attention to Javier's work and to our cannabis content. So maybe looking at something that maybe is comparable to you, where they wouldn't look at it like that or see that, you know, just by seeing it.
Yeah, well, look, I've over the course of my career, the number one way I've made money is getting in, identifying either companies or sectors where there's just an enormous growth story. I bought Apple at 35 cents split adjusted 22 years ago. I bought I was on national TV the day Netflix bottomed on October 1st, 2012 at $7.78 a share. And said that Netflix is this decade's Amazon, right? You know, I owned Amazon at $48 back in the day. Now, stupidly, I didn't hold these for 20 years like I should have. But, you know, I still made some pretty good money, and that was a great way to make money. The second way I've made money in my career is bottom fishing, trying to find good companies that babies thrown out with the bathwater, et cetera, turnaround situations, et cetera. So, one example I will give is in the end of 2002, the beginning of 2003, right when the Iraq War, or the first Iraq War, was starting. The war was clearly coming. Oil prices had skyrocketed, gasoline prices had gone up, and investors were freaking out that Americans weren't going to be shopping at malls anymore. And so the retail sector, any mall-based retailers, were getting clobbered. But in addition, the restaurant sector, Burger King and McDonald's were having a price war. So all the smaller companies like Jack in the Box were getting hammered, et cetera. So the retail and restaurant sectors were getting hammered to what I thought was, you know, what might be a temporary, maybe for a few months, there could be some headwinds. But long term, you know, these were some great companies, et cetera. So I just sort of waded in and bought a basket of these. Right. So. I think there's some comparisons here of a sector with a great, in that case, there wasn't a regulatory issue as well. And institutional investors couldn't know, you know, there wasn't an issue of whether institutional investors could own the stocks, but just in terms of general investor sentiment toward a sector, it had really pulled back a lot. And due to short term things that it was, you know, it when other investors are thinking short term, if you can look out more than a month or a quarter, look out a year and say, where's this going to be in a year or two? That can be a big advantage, because almost all the money in the world is managed on a short term trigger, because institutional investors are all evaluated short term. And most individual investors are just human beings are hardwired to try and get rich quick, and particularly after this long bull market, right? Well, one of the big advantages you then can have as an individual investor is to say, you know what, this is my retirement account, or even if it's not, you know, I don't need this money. I mean, you shouldn't have any money in the market that you're going to need in the next 3 years anyway.
Yeah.
So that's an advantage, being able to have a time horizon longer than a few months can enable you to take advantage of market inefficiencies, but it requires a certain level of patience and discipline and being willing to be down 20% out of the box in a few months just because you didn't nail the bottom.
Now I have, sorry, go ahead, Bobby.
No, please go.
No, I just, that's awesome. Thank you for that very detailed response. I just wanted to ask one more question. I'll let Javi finish us off. Bringing back to cannabis, you said GTI was your favorite cannabis stock prior to the first bubble pop. Now, do you see an MSO or US company leading the way? Is it GTI still? Is it Trulieve? Or do you need to focus on that with MSO?
Yeah. Green Thumb, you know, we got in at 13, went to 39. We exited at 29. It's back to 20 today, which is sort of... you know, at that price, I'd just rather own a basket, right? Mm-hmm. And at back when it was at $13, and we felt like there was maybe a fundamental catalyst. Turns out it Democrats, the blue wave, didn't really dramatically improve the fundamentals, but it gave us an opportunity. It changed the sentiment a lot. and really ripped the stock. It was up 3x at one point. We got out at 112% gain. We were absolutely right on that. But today, I'm coming here as a generalist and just saying, I think the whole sector, I think honestly, just picking a basket in the sector and you'll do fine. And it'll be lower risk because it's very hard to pick winners in emerging sectors like this, to be sure. It's one of the other reasons I sort of like a basket approach. And keep in mind, when we recommended Green Thumb, it was part of a 10-stock portfolio covering a number of different sectors. So in that way, we were diversifying our subscribers. But look, if someone watching this really gets to know the sector in the same way I know the retail and restaurant sector, then, you know, buy one, you buy your favorite, or buy, you know, a little basket of 3 to 5. I remember, you know, I bought 5 retailers and 5 restaurant stocks back in 2003. Then it took a few months before things bottomed. I bought McDonald's at $16. But my last buy was at 12:30 the day it bottomed. And, you know, stock's been a 20 bagger since then, right? So again, you just, most importantly, be right on the fundamentals, maybe keep a little dry powder to add to a position. When you get in, you should expect that just on sentiment or whatever, or just market volatility, that at some point you're going to be down 20%. Any stock you ever buy, that should be your expectation going in. Because look, what are the odds that you exactly bottom tick something? Like zero, right? So keep a little dry powder and psychologically be prepared, you know, assuming the fundamentals haven't changed, it psychologically feels good to, you know, dollar cost average down. But you better be right on the stock, because you can dollar cost average down into oblivion, of course. Do not try and dollar cost average down on GameStop or AMC, my two least favorite stocks of 2022.
Fair enough.
Makes sense.
I have one last question to close it up, since you're a generalist, right? It's a general question, right? Cannabis seems to be, as a sector, somewhere close to somewhat similar to something similar to a bottom, right? But overall, as you say, we've been experiencing one of the longest bull markets in history, if not the longest, right? I'm 32. I'm a random guy from Argentina. I want to put some money into the stock market. And some of my friends tell me, well, you got nothing to lose. You have only time. You know, you got time on your side. You got 30 years. So which is it? Do I have time on my side, or are we, approaching the end of what has been the longest bull run in history, right? Will this bull run end? You know, logically, yeah. I think it will.
Well, the answer is if for your young folks who are decades away from retirement, I'll give your viewers the same advice I gave my two older daughters, age 25, 3 years out of college, and 22, 6 months or 8 months or 10 months out of college now. And, you know, both of them, one is working as a consultant at EY, one is working for MSG Sports, working with season ticket holders of the Knicks and the Rangers. MSG Sports owns those two sports franchises. So they both have salary jobs, they both have retirement plans, they're working for big organizations. And the advice is very simple. Number one, control your expenses. Figure out whatever your after-tax income is and live beneath it. What that means, therefore, is that you are saving. You are a net saver. Second thing is sign up for your company's retirement plans. Both these companies happen to offer matching, which is free money. The ultimate investment of all time is if you can put away the first $5,000 pre-tax into a retirement account, and your employer will match that and just hand you $5,000, for example. Okay, so that's number two. And number three is max out on those retirement plans. And that can be, I don't know, 10 or 20 grand a year, because the value of pre-tax money that you can invest, and every year, like, you can sell, and the capital gains are not taxed. And you compound that out from age 25 or 22 to age 65, where you pay no taxes on the gains for 40 plus years. It just runs simple math on that. And you end up with massively more money at the end of the day. So all of those things, by the way, have nothing to do with being a clever investor. Okay. That's the 90% of the game that's most important. Then I happen to tell my daughters, look, just buy the S&P 500 index fund. I don't want to manage your money. I don't want to give you stocks, whatever. And for most people, just buy an index fund, right? Now, if you want to try and be a little clever and buy a couple sector funds like MSOS or XBI for cannabis or biotech with part of your money, great. And if you really want to invest a lot of time and energy and try and beat the market with individual stock picking, great. But the vast majority of people don't need to do that.
Great answer, Whitney. I mean, you covered a lot of what Benzinga does just inherently in that answer. So thank you for that. Any other words you want to say to cannabis, to MSOS, to the year ahead as we depart here?
Yeah. Look, I guess it's sort of a little bit of a mixed message in that I'm super bullish on the cannabis sector. But super bullish doesn't mean I'm backing up the truck and putting half my net worth into the sector. Like, you know, I think investors should be prepared for some choppiness and volatility. My general feeling is that we're in the seventh to eighth inning of this long bull market. Which means I'm not saying batten down the hatches right now, but I'm definitely seeing sort of indicators of foolishness and that have indicated previous tops. Just generally, I'm not saying play defense 100%, but it's not a time to just pile in and play offense 100% and be day trading options and on margin and in the cannabis and biotech sectors as attractive as I think they are, right? Exactly. It's a time for a little bit smaller bets and a diversified portfolio. And I do think that there's, in almost every sector I'm looking at today, I will say that I'm finding opportunity, but also some terrible junk to avoid, right? Whereas there was a time from the bottom of the COVID bubble in March through the meme stock peak in January of last year. So March of 2020, about 10 months till the end of January 2021, where you just had to own the super high growth stuff and maybe stumble into a couple meme stocks and maybe throw in some cryptos in there. And you just made a fortune and nothing else worked, right? Those sectors have all pulled back quite a bit. And I think a lot of the same investors were in cannabis as well. And that's part of the reason the cannabis sector has pulled back is not just the fundamentals. It's what's been going on in the cannabis sector investors' portfolios outside of the cannabis sector. They've been taking losses. And so they're pulling back and licking their wounds, right? Again, I love that is with new money coming into the sector. If everybody else is shell shocked and feeling terrible, that's what I like to see at a bottom. But I have a feeling many of your viewers may just fit that description and are feeling a little shell shocked and all. The first rule of holes is when you're in one, stop digging. So if somebody's sort of gotten hammered, they got into GameStop at 480 and now it's at 150 and they're like, okay, I gotta make it back. And, one of the old sayings is you don't have to make it back the same way you lost it. So that's why I'm warning people about don't think just because GameStop and AMC are down a bunch. I think they were 20x overvalued and now they're 10x overvalued, right? That is not opportunity. Look for companies, look for sectors where they're good cash flows, where they're trading at a low multiple of those cash flows, but importantly, where you think the long-term opportunities, there's still a lot of growth. And that's, the cannabis sector's got those characteristics, but understand it's a volatile sector. There's risk here. So, this isn't something like Berkshire Hathaway where you want to make MSOS 25% of your portfolio, which you could do with Berkshire.
Right. Well, Whitney, do your research. Honestly, it sounds like, there's a lot to that in terms of due diligence, but it makes sense. CEO and founder of Empire Financial Research, we really appreciate you being on here. I need to connect with you offline on what you think the trash is in those sectors, just my own personal knowledge. But thank you so much.
Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say. It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, Geico makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
As long as I continue to make everything look pretty and shiny on the outside, I didn't care how miserable and ugly I felt on the inside. I realized that I deserved a better me, so I can be the wife and the mom that I really wanted to be.
If you're ready to get real about addiction treatment, call Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.